Hello and welcome to Principal 7's first podcast episode. Today we're going to be addressing criminal appeals and applications to the Criminal Cases Review Commission, which is more commonly known as the CCRC. We'll provide you with important yet generally hard to find answers to real life concerns about this topic, and hopefully by the end of this podcast you'll be far wiser and in a far better position to know how to proceed. So let's jump straight into this, and if you're listening from overseas, please bear in mind that we are addressing matters that relate to the legal jurisdiction of England and Wales only. Let's start then with who you're actually listening to. My name is Paul Hagan. I'm the Director and Senior Operations Manager of Principal 7 Limited, and I have considerable experience in both the private investigation industry and the criminal appeal arena. I've spent over 16 years in criminal law, with 10 of those years dealing specifically with criminal appeals and CCRC applications. I'm a former Director of Criminal Appeal Specialists of Europe, and I've previously started and been the head of criminal appeal departments within three large and prominent criminal solicitor firms within the Greater Manchester area, whilst dealing with over 1,000 cases between those firms. I've worked on and undertaken appeal cases involving murder, gangland slayings, Class A drug importations, money laundering, rape, kidnapping, child abuse, theft, aggravated burglary, along with many more. I have travelled extensively to obtain witness statements and other evidence to places such as Colombia, the Cayman Islands, Jamaica, the USA, and most of Europe. My knowledge and my abilities are an essential key to my preparations and submissions of strong and realistic grounds of appeal. Prior to specialising in criminal appeals, I had been engaged in live criminal law cases in both the magistrates and Crown Courts, along with a brief spell at prison law, which I don't mind saying I absolutely hated. In addition to all of the above, I have also been actively engaged as a private investigator since 1994, running companies such as Insight Investigations in Manchester, Gibson Investigation Services Limited, Legal and Domestic Investigations Limited, and more recently and currently, Principal 7 Limited. The benefits of having that experience in the investigation industry include being able to utilise my analytical expertise when it comes to properly considering the prosecution's evidence and identifying what crucial avenues were not explored by your previous legal team. What do I mean by that? Well, for example, I had a case where the prosecution served a reconstructed video recording in an attempt to show how it was that they had discovered 2 ounces of a Class A drug in the light bulb area of an old microwave oven. Now, the microwave was found under a load of rubbish in a shed and in the rear garden of the defendant's house. The client was insisted that the evidence was planted by the police. The video recording was served on the defence solicitors with no audio attached, and the solicitors just accepted the evidence without challenge, so it was basically just a silent film. When I examined the case, I had insisted upon the audio because the defendant had told me about a conversation that he had had with one of the police officers, and I wanted to hear if that was captured on the recording. Now, I should point out that the police had initially refused to send me the video which contained the audio, but by pure chance and sheer luck, I then spoke to another officer who, possibly by accident, sent me a copy of the original recording. That tape changed everything. Unbelievably, the video had captured 2 police officers talking to each other, and one could be heard saying, "Hey, let's put those 2 shooters in there as well." I had that audio enhanced and placed on a loop, and this resulted in the client going home a free man. There are many such cases that I've dealt with, and many of those have resulted in finding crucial evidence that the client's legal team just simply never addressed. We'll get into the specific reasons why shortly, but in a nutshell, it all boils down to money. Now that you know a little bit about me, let's move on to publicly funded appeals, or appeals that are undertaken on legal aid. And unlike anyone else that I know of, I'm going to give you the cold hard facts. Now, if the legal team that represented you at trial advises you that there are grounds of appeal, the legal aid or the representation order that you had for that trial will continue to be enforced for the barrister to draft grounds of appeal, and it will allow the solicitor a nominal amount to prepare and submit the application. There's very little money on that representation order to do this, but in truth, there's very little that needs to be done. The team that represented you at trial should already have an encyclopedic knowledge of your case and the issues contained therein. But what happens when your trial team advises you that there are no grounds of appeal and as far as they're concerned, your case is closed? Well, unfortunately, there is a fundamental truth to the saying, you get what you pay for. Generally, you may be able to obtain legal aid funding of around £300 for a different solicitor, and by that I mean a different firm of solicitors, to deal with your appeal. If further funds are then required, your new representative can seek to extend that amount, but this is something that is getting pretty hard to achieve. Previously, when I was working for a solicitor's firm, I personally made applications for an extra £30,000 and have obtained that authority the very next day. That is simply no longer possible, as solicitors now can struggle even just to get a few hundred pounds more. Let's examine that though. If you have gone to a new firm of solicitors for a second opinion and they make an application for legal aid for them to provide you with advice and assistance on an appeal, the amount of work that that solicitor will need to undertake could be substantial depending on what type of case it is. For instance, if it was a shoplifting case, the depositions and case papers would probably be quite small, and they could probably deal with this in about an hour or so. But what if it was something more serious, murder or rape allegations, for example, and what if you had a 6 to 8 week trial? The material for your new solicitors to consider would be substantial and require a great many hours of reading. That's just to familiarise themselves with the case. Then they would need to read it again and analyse it properly, take notes and identify any potential issues. Transcripts would probably need to be obtained, witnesses identified and tracked down. In fact, a whole range of work will most likely need to be undertaken, and I'll leave it entirely up to you to consider if that work could be undertaken properly for around £300 to £500 that they receive on legal aid. Bear this in mind as well though. Under the Legal Aid Franchise Regulations, a solicitor is not allowed to suggest or advise you on what grounds of appeal may exist. They are only allowed to address any issues that you have raised yourself within your initial inquiry, even if they can see something else. All of the above, of course, is dependent on whether you meet the means-tested criteria for legal aid appeals in the first place. This is quite strict, and it includes the joint income of your spouse as well. It further takes into account any assets such as your home or investments that you may have. However, if you earn one of the streamlined benefits and don't have any assets, you should be able to successfully apply for legal aid for your appeal. This is known as passporting. Numerous firms taking on legally aided appeal cases will work on volume because they are guaranteed that legal aid fee regardless as to whether you have grounds of appeal or not. If the legal aid rate for each case is £277.50, they will get that money regardless of the result. That's why they will seek to work on volume, and their business model will not allow them to dwell on any hypotheticals. If they have 20 cases per month, that will bring in over £5,000 for that firm. If they advertise correctly, this could grow to 100 cases per month. That's close to £30,000 per month. Remember, they will get that fee regardless of the result. In theory, all they need to do is just read some of the key paperwork and then decide that in their opinion, you do not have grounds. Under the same franchise regulations, you would then have to wait a minimum of 3 months before you could apply to another firm of solicitors for another opinion. For all of the above reasons, I would strongly advise you to stay away from publicly funded or legally aided appeals. Generally, you will only have one chance to submit your appeal documentation correctly, and it's really important to get it right, not just in the consideration process, but every step along the way. It is true that if your application fails, you may be able to apply to the Criminal Cases Review Commission, more commonly known as the CCRC. But you will not be able to readdress any of the issues that have already been dealt with by the courts, including the Court of Appeal. I'll deal with CCRC cases further along in this podcast. So let's move on to privately funded criminal appeal cases. This is where you pay for it privately yourself. This is one way to ensure that your case will be examined correctly. Or is it? The fee structure will either be an hourly rate or you may be offered a fixed fee. Your new representative may work with counsel from the onset of an appeal, seeking advice and guidance on any issues that you yourself have raised, along with any grounds that they may have also found. They may require all of the transcripts of your trial and any other hearings to ensure that they have an accurate account of what had actually transpired. The financial costs of undertaking a case in this way can be quite expensive, and fees between £80,000 and £300,000 are not unheard of. Unlike legally aided cases, privately funded cases have no restrictions on them as to what can and cannot be examined. If you have no idea if realistic grounds of appeal exist, you can have the case analysed with a view to your new team making a factual determination. However, if grounds of appeal do not exist, you will hopefully be advised accordingly. This is primarily because there are some stiff penalties for you if the court finds the application to be unrealistic and frivolous or wasteful. Now, there are many firms throughout the UK that advertise and undertake criminal appeal work, and some of them may have their own criminal appeal department. That means that all the cases within that department are purely appeal related, and the staff dealing with them should be experienced, and at the very least experienced, in the processes involved. Even firms without a specific appeal department will no doubt still be experienced in the process of the application and may very well be competent in undertaking appeal work. One thing to bear in mind though when considering which criminal appeal solicitors to choose is their experience, not as a solicitor, but within the specific arena of criminal appeals. As mentioned earlier, prior to my specialising in criminal appeal work, I had spent some 6 years or so in live criminal cases, and I can tell you, you cannot apply the same tactics or approaches that are required for criminal appeals. For example, the rules are completely different, and the odds are heavily stacked against you. In the criminal courts, you are, allegedly, innocent until proven guilty. In the appellate courts, however, the burden of proof is reversed. You have to establish everything, and it needs to be fully supported with indisputable evidence. The Court of Appeal is not there to overturn any decision made by the lower courts or the jury at your trial. To the contrary, they are there to reinforce the public's confidence in our judicial system. They cannot be seen to be continuously overturning the court's or the jury's decisions, and thereby implying that our judicial system simply does not work. The rules are in place to ensure that they only overturn a decision, quash a conviction, or reduce a sentence when an obvious miscarriage of justice or an overly excessive sentence has been imposed. Such rules include refusing to readdress any issues that have previously been raised or should have been raised at trial. In other words, if any evidence was available at the time of your trial and was not obtained or used by your legal team, it would, unless exceptional circumstances existed, not be accepted as grounds of appeal or be included in support of your appeal. I'm reminded of one such case that I had dealt with many years ago, which involved an alleged fraud. The client had been convicted after a trial, but the solicitors had failed to obtain his accounts from his accountant. Taking on the appeal, I obtained those accounts, and it became crystal clear to both myself and the newly instructed counsel that the client was completely innocent of the offence. When we lodged the appeal, the court refused to accept the new evidence as it was technically available at the time of the trial, and they said, and I quote, that simply because the trial solicitors failed to obtain it at the time did not make it fresh evidence now, unquote. The appeal was dismissed and the client remained convicted. There are a mound of rules and regulations that must be overcome and worked around, and a properly formatted and realistic appeal should only be undertaken by criminal appeal experts and then reaffirmed by experienced counsel. But what if you can't afford to pay privately? Well, there are also numerous not-for-profit organisations who give up their spare time and work pro bono, which is to say without charging, and who have had success in several high-profile cases. In addition, there are law colleges that will offer to undertake your case for free, which allow their students to gain experience. These cases will always be supervised and all work will be checked by the tutor. If finance is really an issue here, I would highly recommend the above as opposed to any legally aided attempts. Cost is also a factor that should be considered when contemplating who to choose to assist you with your appeal. I know of one firm in Bristol who had charged a client £180,000 plus VAT to assist in his appeal case against incest and rape. On examination of that case, the correct price should have been less than £20,000. So now that we have dealt with all of that, what should we expect when you decide to appeal? Well, if grounds of appeal exist, and they must be realistic, counsel will prepare an advice on appeal against conviction or sentence or both. That advice, along with the grounds and the application form, will be submitted to the higher court. So if you're appealing from the magistrates, the appeal will be in the Crown Court, and if you're appealing from the Crown Court decision, your appeal will be dealt with at the High Court. Normally, the application must be submitted within 21 to 28 days from conviction or sentence, depending on what you're appealing and from which type of court. If you apply outside of those time limits, you will need to show that there are exceptional circumstances. Having your appeal looked at by someone other than your trial representatives is often sufficient to satisfy that requirement, but other exceptions may also need to be considered, and a persuasive argument will need to be put forward. It may be that you've never appealed at all, and many months and years may have passed since your conviction and sentence. Such cases are not automatically doomed to failure, but a valid argument would need to be put forward to overcome the time limitations imposed. You should be aware, though, that one of the most common difficulties when wanting to appeal after quite some time had elapsed since your conviction is that the case papers may no longer be available. This is also true of the court records. They may have been destroyed, and this would be extremely difficult to overcome. If we look at the appeals from the Crown Court, the first process in submitting your application is to pass a single judge stage. In the year ending September 2021, there were 3,110 applications to the single judge, with only 1,210 of those applications being granted, and subsequently only 11% of those were successful at the full Court of Appeal. If the single judge rejects the application, it is possible to ignore that decision and push ahead to the full court regardless. However, this must be very carefully considered, as there are harsh penalties if you ultimately fail before the full court. Having said that, the single judge can also impose those penalties if he or she takes a view that you have simply wasted their time with the application. It is vital that any applications to appeal must therefore be carefully considered and expertly prepared. There will be no giving you the benefit of the doubt, and you must prove your case absolutely and without any other possibilities being present. Such preparations are often time-consuming and may involve interviews with potential new witnesses, the taking of statements, and the obtaining of other evidence in support. When considering a criminal appeal from the Crown Court in 2023, you should be aware that an appeal against conviction can now take up to 10 months from submitting that application form. An appeal against sentence only is approximately 5 months. The average preparation time, including obtaining all the required evidence and receiving counsel's advice, could be an additional 3 to 5 months. If the application ultimately fails, there is still an option of submitting an amended application to the CCRC and asking them to refer your case back to the Court of Appeal. I will address this further shortly. So how can Principle 7 Limited help, and what do we do differently? Well, once an inquiry is made with us, we make arrangements to attend upon you. This is the same even if you are making an inquiry on behalf of somebody else who is in custody. We attend upon you first, and then we attend upon them at the prison. We charge you an initial fee to cover that attendance or attendances, and the amount is purely dependent on you or the appellant's location. During the initial meeting with you, a fixed price fee will be offered, and if that fee is agreed, the initial fee for the visit will be deducted from that fixed fee. It is only in place to cover our costs should you decide not to proceed. The initial fee is generally around £500 to £700 and includes up to a 2-hour consultation with both you and or the appellant. And remember, you will get that feedback anyway if you proceed to instructors. Now, if you're acting on behalf of a family member or friend and you will be financing the appeal yourself, the appellant is the person who is considered to be the client. That means that he or she can override any instructions that you yourself may give us. Once instructed, we'll obtain the case papers from the previous solicitors, and this includes what is known as the correspondence file. The correspondence file will contain all the notes, including any handwritten notes, that were generated by your legal team and should show what had, and more importantly, what had not been undertaken on your behalf. The reason why this is so important And I know that this will hit the nerve of any solicitors listening to this, but the reason why it's so important to get that correspondence file is that your grounds of appeal may very well rest upon what your legal team did not do on your case. Now, depending upon what that was, it may very well lead to a criticism of that legal team. That opens a whole new can of worms in itself. For example, let's say that you were convicted of a drug importation, but your defense was that you had no idea that the items contained drugs. Let's say it was bottles of alcohol that somebody gave you for a friend, and you were silly enough to say, yes, I'll take that back to the UK and I'll give it to them. I mean, it's a sealed bottle of spirits as far as you're concerned. You get stopped by customs, and they identify the bottle as containing the drugs. You're pretty much screwed at that point. As part of your defence, you would need to have a very legitimate reason to have gone to that particular destination in the first place, i.e. a family holiday or business, etc. But then the questions would come, why there, why at that time? And don't forget, those questions, and more importantly, your answers in interview, will form part of the Crown's evidence against you. If you're thinking or pausing or not giving your answers in a firm and persuasive manner, it only adds suspicion to the jury's interpretation. I had such a case during my time as a live case lawyer. The female client had told customs officers that she had gone to Jamaica for her mother's funeral, and that whilst there she had bumped into an old boyfriend and had had a 3-week relationship with him prior to returning back to the UK. He gave her a number of items, including bottles of spirits, to bring back and give to his friends. Now, we won that case because I investigated every single aspect of her story. I travelled to Jamaica and I took witness statements from family members and, most importantly, the funeral director. In essence, everything she said was fully supported in her defence. Had we not done that, she would probably have been convicted based on the evidence and the suspicious circumstances. These types of actions, or lack of them, are what we look for in the correspondence file. Imagine, if you will, the same scenario above, and you have been convicted because the solicitors failed to realise the importance of obtaining that evidence in support. I won't get into this now, but generally it's all about money and how much the solicitors have agreed with the legal aid agency about how much they will do your case for. They'll agree in advance of any work, and if they don't agree, they simply won't get the representation order. Extra work, such as travelling abroad and securing defence evidence, is something that the solicitor would need to fight pretty hard for to get the authorisation on legal aid. But that doesn't help you in the above scenario, and in fact it's quite the opposite. The jury will be left wondering why you hadn't bothered to get supporting evidence for your claim. So we look at what we would have done, what should have been done, and we apply that to what was actually done. Sometimes it is only this that can generate grounds of appeal. Of course, it is never as simple as that. Grounds of appeal based on criticism of your legal team is a very difficult argument, and you would need to show that the solicitors failed to meet the standards of a competent and diligent lawyer. So whilst criticism could work, it is generally not enough on its own unless the actions, or lack of them, was so far below standard that it can be seen to have significantly impacted the jury's decision. Once we obtain the material from the solicitors, it is carefully considered and all issues discussed and addressed with you and or the client. Points of law are included in the consideration process and potential grounds of appeal are noted. If you or the client have already identified specific issues, these will also be analysed carefully. It might be necessary to obtain some of the transcripts from the trial or any other hearings where various topics have been dealt with in court. Here's the difference though. Where other firms will want all of the transcripts regardless of cost, we will only require some of them. This is because the notes of any hearing, including the trial, should form part of that correspondence file, and we can simply read those notes. Any controversial or significant issues that we would need to rely upon can simply be identified from a particular morning or an afternoon session, and we would just need the transcripts of that particular session. This will be discussed with you anyway, as any transcript costs, along with any other disbursements, will not be included within the fixed fee. For example, you may require the instruction of a fingerprint expert. His or her costs will be separate from any fixed fee agreed with us. We work with our clients and or their agents to establish and prepare the very best opportunities for success. Once prepared, the grounds will need to be signed off by you and the client. Only at that stage will counsel be instructed. I mean, why would you pay for counsel to look at your case as well? It doesn't make sense. But generally, on privately paid instructions, barristers are getting involved at the early stages and charging accordingly. At Principal 7 Limited, we do the work and only use counsel to write the advice and represent you at the appeal hearing. We can recommend specific barristers which we have either worked with previously or which we feel will do their utmost to make a successful application, including representation at the appellate court. If you already have somebody in mind, we can equally approach them on your behalf and instruct them accordingly. Remember though, counsel's fees will also fall outside the previously agreed fixed fee and will need to be paid for separately. Unless you're using King's Counsel, this should generally be under £3,000. Now you may be wondering what type of criminal cases can be appealed. In a nutshell, all of them, providing there are valid and realistic arguments. Even if you pleaded guilty to an offence, it may still be possible to appeal. This would mostly involve a criticism of your legal team, such as, they advised me wrong, etc. But it could also be brought about by fresh evidence, i.e., had you known about it at the time, you would never have pleaded. In fact, we have a case right now where our client was so intoxicated, he had absolutely no recollection of whether he committed the offence or not. He was rightly advised to plead guilty based on the allegations of the complainant, as he couldn't prove otherwise. Since that plea, however, CCTV evidence has emerged that shows conclusively that the complainant lied. I'd like to conclude now with a brief summary of issues concerning the Criminal Cases Review Commission, or abbreviated to the CCRC. So this is a UK government-funded organisation that's been around since 1997, and it's basically there to investigate and review cases where individuals claim to have been wrongly convicted or unfairly sentenced. The CCRC have the power to investigate cases and can refer those cases back to the Court of Appeal if they believe that there is a real possibility that the conviction or sentence was incorrect. They can also refer cases back to the trial court for a retrial. Now, the CCRC can assist in several ways, but in order for them to consider a case, it must meet certain criteria. For example, it will only review a case where there is new evidence or argument that was not raised at the original trial or appeal. They will also only generally consider cases where the applicant has already exhausted all of their appeal options, although there are some exceptions to this rule. Just like the courts, the CCRC are guided by a set of rules when considering a case. They have to act independently and impartially, and they must base their decision solely on the evidence that is presented to them. They must also consider the interests of justice and the impact on the victims and their families. The CCRC offer the above as a free service, which means that you can, in theory, apply to them for yourself. So if money is a real issue for you, that may be the most feasible option. However, please bear in mind that you really need to get your application and your submissions right. So if you don't have any experience or confidence with this, please consider another option and clearly at least speak to us first. I should point out as well that if you instruct Principal 7 Limited to prepare an appeal on your behalf and ultimately that appeal is rejected, we would then look to prepare and apply submissions to the CCRC at no cost to you whatsoever. However, if you have already appealed and you require assistance in applying to the CCRC, Principal 7 Limited are happy to assist in both the preparation and submission of the application. Your CCRC case will be dealt with and treated exactly the same as we would an appeal case. When you engage with Principal 7 Limited to undertake your criminal appeal or CCRC case, you also get your own dedicated lawyer who will be available both in and out of hours, 365 days of the year. You can call your lawyer's mobile phone, and subject to them being free to take that call, he or she will answer that call. In addition, all work is personally supervised and checked by me from its conception to its completion. And of course, I also undertake cases as well, so it may very well be me that you'll be dealing with anyway. So that's it. There's a lot to take in, but to be honest, everything that I've just spoken about is really just a summary. Every case is different and nothing is as straightforward as it seems. Anyway, I hope the information is helpful, and don't forget, you can always call us for a free and absolutely no obligation telephone consultation if you need to find out more. You can contact us via our website, www.principal7.co.uk, or via email, info@principal7.co.uk, or by calling us free on 0800 772 0677. Many thanks for listening.